Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
The following is a special presentation of Alpha Media. Welcome to Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. Now, here's your host, Brett Recap.
Thank you very much, and welcome in to the 445th edition of Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of the stories making news here in the Pacific Northwest and beyond. As we say hello to the month of December 2022, on all 7 of our Alpha Media Portland radio stations, including FM News 101. Well, we're going to talk about prescription drugs here. So when 56 Bi-Mart stores across Oregon, Washington, and Idaho got out of the prescription business last year, the Oregon State Pharmacy Association decided it was time to expose the middlemen in the system, pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs. We spoke with Executive Director Brian Mayo, who says they talked to 86 Oregon pharmacies about what he calls a broken pharmacy drug system.
There's a lot of different elements that go into the pharmacy industry. And we did a study on the pharmacy benefit managers, because they essentially are the middlemen that set the prices for the drugs that you pay at the local retail outlet. And the pharmacy owner, based on their contracts, do not have any control over the prices that they're allowed to charge. And with PBMs, they don't have any transparency. So they are able to charge what they want from the pharmacy, and they are also allowed to charge Oregon Medicaid whatever they want without having to disclose their prices based on the contracts.
Sure. And they're essentially working to get rebates from the drug makers, right?
That is correct. So they work with the pharmacies and the wholesalers and the insurance companies to determine drug pricing.
Okay. I understand that I'm an end user. You know, most of our listeners are people that just need drugs for whatever reason. They're prescribed by their doctors, and we just see, all we know are what the prices are once we go to our pharmacy, assuming that we have insurance and minus copays and deductibles, etc. Is the system broken? Is your study finding that the PBMs, who are the middlemen, is that what your findings are, where we could use some help?
Absolutely. The system is totally broken. And we've been talking about this for years and how PBMs are a problem with the pharmacy industry. But when the Bi-Marts went out of business last year, we knew that we couldn't wait around and do anything more, or we're going to have more pharmacies go out of business. And that causes, obviously, a patient safety issue, because if your local pharmacy closes down, you're not able to get your medications. And once you get transferred over to a different pharmacy, you have longer lines. So you can see it right now if you just walk into your pharmacy, that the lines are all backed up. The staff is stressed out and trying to catch up. And a lot of that has to do with the PBMs and what the rates are that they're providing for reimbursements, because the pharmacies aren't able to hire additional staff because they're barely treading water as it is. And they're not getting reimbursed fairly. No, in fact, in our study, we showed that out of 100 prescriptions, 75 of them don't even cover the cost of the drug and labor. So in order to keep the lights on, the doors open, pharmacies are doing more and more with less staff, and that's been a challenge. And with Bi-Mart closing, we just couldn't sit around anymore. There's several other states who have done similar projects as what we have. Ohio was, like, I believe, the first one to do a PBM study, and that has led them to having their Secretary of State do an additional study. And the Attorney General has now sued the PBMs and recovered over $100 million for the state of Ohio, and they're not going to stop there. They're going to keep going. So we're hoping that we can follow that model as well. And the Secretary of State in Oregon is also doing a similar study, and her findings should be coming out at the beginning of 2023.
You talked about a lack of transparency. Is that because of the government agencies? Is that because of the Medicaid and the Medicare? You know, is that just basically a HIPAA or a bylaw, or are there existing laws that block some of these rebates and some of these large funds from being known, really?
PBMs just aren't regulated. And, you know, Senator Wyden has been raising this issue for several years. So we We're glad that he is aware of the issue and able to do things from the federal standpoints. But here in Oregon, we need to make changes right now. You know, in our study, we found one drug that was dispensed that's a generic MS drug. The manufacturer price is $350, but Oregon Medicaid was being charged nearly $3,000. And over the course of a year, that one drug cost the state of Oregon $1.9 million, more than it should have.
Yeah, those are exponential type of percentages in dollars. Isn't that getting any attention, or is it all just basically hidden? Because so who's getting rich? It's not the consumer. It's clearly not, you know, the individuals at the pharmacies. There's a lot of money. Is it just being lost?
That money is being pocketed by the PBMs. And that's the problem is, you know, you take a look at the three largest PBMs that run 80% of the market share and control so much of the industry that they're Fortune 10 companies, and there's some that you've never even heard of. So it's crazy to think that these companies that have so much power and so much influence on the prescription drug industry aren't being monitored, and there needs to be transparency. And that's what part of this is set up to do. We're going to bring a PBM reform bill to Oregon in 2023. And we needed the data from the study to prove what we've been talking about for years so that we can put it in front of the legislators and say, hey, this is a problem here in Oregon. You may have heard that it's not, but it is. And we need to do something to fix it because it's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democrat issue. It's an Oregonian issue.
Brian Mayo is the Oregon State Pharmacy Association Executive Director with us on Beyond the Headlines. I'm Brett Rekamp. When you did this study on the PBMs, how did you get a hold of all this information if it's hidden or not public? So it's available, you had to dig for it. How'd you recover all these numbers?
Well, the great part about our pharmacy members is that they are passionate and they know that this is a problem. So we were able to have 86 different pharmacies provide their data to this study. So we were able to take that information, provide it to the company that does the reporting for us, along with several other states that they've done reports in. And then they took the information and compared it against the Medicaid system, which has its own reporting and is publicly available. So there's a lot of details that went into it, but we had 86 pharmacies in Oregon provide their data to help out with the study.
You're throwing around some large numbers in terms of inflated prices when it comes to retail price, quote unquote, or list price, or what? Why is there a tenfold difference in these prices?
Because the PBMs can get away with it. It's ridiculous to think that one drug that at $350 is a lot of money on the top end that you would normally pay, but they're charging Medicaid $2,928. It's just absurd. In our study, there were 745 prescriptions that were dispensed of that drug in 2021, which accounted for $2.5 million in revenue. Out of all of the other drugs that were dispensed, 568,000 or whatever it was, that only brought in $1.4 million for the pharmacies. So you could have had a pharmacy that was dedicated just to the generic drug for Tecfidera, which is an MS drug, and made more money on that one drug than you could 568,000 other prescriptions.
That's fairly enlightening because the average individual might be thinking that the large drug companies are the ones, you know, hogging, quote unquote, you know, all the profits. But you're telling us that there is a whole almost unseen middle section of this system, and that is where the price gouging is happening.
Yeah, it's a big area that's been secret for the most part for several years. That, you know, when they originally started, they had good intentions of working with the pharmacy and the insurance companies, but they have gone unregulated and are causing patients to have to pay more, and for pharmacies to have to go out of business. And it's a concern. Like with Vymart going out of business, that's a huge issue, and that's a huge black eye in Oregon. And we have to do something to just, you know, our PBM reform bill is going to make it so that we can just keep the doors open for patients and be able to have them go to a pharmacy and get the prescriptions that they need.
Yeah, you had already mentioned a couple of lawmakers, Senator Wyden being one of those, obviously a U.S. senator, and also a couple other states making some reforms in terms of attorneys general. Is this a state issue? Can Oregon do something, or is this really a federal problem? And is that requires Congress and also perhaps the administration, the president?
So it definitely is a federal issue that the FTC is opening a investigation into as well. But it is definitely an Oregon issue, and Oregon legislators need to take action. They need to take a look at our report, and they need to approach the Oregon Health Authority and ask, why is this happening? And the Secretary of State for Oregon is doing an audit of the PBMs and the Medicaid system, and her results are going to be much more in depth than what ours were, but it's going to prove the same results.
Right. So what can consumers do, Brian? Brian May with the Oregon State Pharmacy Association. What can a regular consumer do at your local Walgreens or Fred Meyer or wherever you get your prescriptions?
What I need you to do is to reach out to your politicians, make sure that they are aware of the concerns, and share information about our study, which is on OregonPharmacy.org, and tell them that we need to do something here in Oregon now to fix it, because otherwise more pharmacies are going to go out of business, more patients are going to have problems getting their medications. There's always the concern that the pharmacy isn't able to stay in business, and then that causes somebody to have to go into the emergency room because they're not able to get their medications in time. So we need you to reach out to your politicians. We just had a turnover with several different legislators that, you know, may not know what a PBM is. You know, this might be the first time that you're hearing about a PBM, but this is definitely an issue that's happening here, and it's an issue for every Oregonian.
When you mentioned the prescription system, both at the retail level where you might walk in and physically get your prescription from a pharmacy, does this also affect the mail-in? Is it a trickle-down effect? Do all these drug companies have to deal with PBMs before it gets to the consumer?
Absolutely. And the mail-in part of patient steering is a huge concern. You know, we have reports of people wanting to go to their pharmacy and are getting turned away because the PBMs have no longer allowed them to dispense the drugs, and they have to get it from mail-in rather than being able to have that relationship with their local pharmacist and continue to go in and have that counseling that they need to discuss all their other medications. So mailing prescriptions is a huge issue.
Oh, you're right. I didn't know about all this, Brian. I bet a lot of people don't. It's a big pie, it sounds like. What good service do the PBMs provide? Because I'm assuming they are doing some things, moving drugs around. Is there a reason for them? Or because, you know, it's America, so you can certainly, if you provide a service, you deserve to get paid. What good are they doing?
That is a good question at this point, because they're able to set their prices. They're able to tell patients where they can, where they have to get their drugs from. You know, the problem with a PBM is that if the pharmacies don't accept their contracts and follow their rules, they get kicked out of the system. So, you know, when you're looking at CVS, Caremark, or Optum, or Express Scripts, pharmacies need to have those patients from those systems so that they can continue to stay in business.
Do you recommend any drug users to vote with where they buy their prescriptions? Does that do any good? Are we able to have any power beyond legislation? Just as a consumer, is there anything you can do?
As a consumer, the biggest thing that you can do is to, first of all, like I said, talk to your legislator, make sure that they are aware of this issue, and have a conversation with your pharmacist as well. When you're in there the next time, they're willing to talk about PBMs and tell you all the things that are going on behind closed doors, and, you know, have that conversation with them. And, you know, they're working hard. They want to serve you and provide you with the best care possible, and you know, just say thank you to them and the technicians, because they are working hard and care about your health needs.
Fascinating. Guess I just wasn't aware of all this, and I'm probably most people who just want their regular monthly prescriptions are not aware of it either. All we know is what happens on a monthly basis. So is there anything else you want to say, maybe boiling it down again for a radio audience?
Yeah, I would like to express how much we appreciate the pharmacists and what they're doing with those 86 pharmacies that were able to provide their data to us to run this study. Also want to thank everyone who has provided media support so that we can spread this the information around and be able to share our message. So Brett, I really appreciate you giving us this opportunity to talk about this, because you're right, PBMs, really nobody knows about that. That's the general public.
Yeah. Can you predict what's going to happen in 2023? I know that, you know, the president has spoken specifically about this issue. Do you see anything on the horizon?
Yeah, I think PBMs know that the end is coming to the way that they're regulating and operating. However, they always come up with different tricks with how to get around things. So more and more states are looking into them, and the FTC is doing an investigation. I know that they're also, the PBMs are budgeting for lawsuits that are coming out. So they know that there's going to be some fines that they have to pay, but they're multi-billion dollar companies. So we're going to have our hands full trying to pass our legislation. They obviously have more money than we do, but we have the patience and the Oregonians to support us and be able to help make a change so that we can serve people better.
That's Brian Mayo, Oregon State Pharmacy Association's Executive Director. We have a story and ways for you to learn more at KXL.com. You're listening to the 445th edition of Beyond the Headlines. I'm your host, Brett Recamp. Just two interviews today. The second one about a lovely trip to England, talking to a wonderful person about it. So if you've never been across the pond, perhaps the time to go is now. Susan Elizabeth Reese Painter is an attorney based in Newport along the beautiful Oregon coast. She tells us all about a trip she just took across the pond with a good friend.
Spent 2 weeks in England in the past, let's see, I guess it's been a month ago, with a friend of mine who is a psychiatrist from Portland. She's British, and she and I actually spent a year together in England at Oxford when I was between second and third year in law school, and she was in medical school. So she decided to go over for 2 months in September and October and invited me to come over for 2 weeks for a nostalgia tour. We started in Oxford, had 5 days there, and then took the train up to Doncaster in Yorkshire, where she grew up, and met some of her family that I knew and some of her family I didn't know. Spent a day in York, then came back south again and spent 2 nights in a place called The Lamb, which is a kind of a lodging above a pub in Ely, next to Ely Cathedral. And then we went from there over to Cambridge for a day trip and traveled around Cambridge and had evensong at King's College Chapel. And from there then to London for a couple days. And then I took the train to Heathrow and the plane back to Seattle. And then Eugene back to Newport. So that was the geography of the trip. And it was lovely. We saw lots of things that I had seen before in Oxford, a lot of the changes that have occurred and things, of course, that stay the same, the ancient buildings, some of which are getting sandblasted to look brighter than they used to be. But Cambridge seems to have done a little more of that than Oxford, which looked pretty dark. But it was a lovely trip.
Yeah, that's just fantastic. So you're able to partner up with someone who knew the landscape and you could move around easily. So you weren't just a tourist on your own.
Yeah. And we both had British Rail passes. So we used the train as much as possible and used the tube in London and it was lovely. And then on my way back, I spent one night at a hotel called the Thistle, which is near Terminal 5, the major terminal for British Airways out at Heathrow. And they have a little electric vehicle called a pod that you spend £6 extra to get the access information for and walk out the next morning anytime after 4. You walk through the parking lot, use the access information to code in the numbers for the gate and walk up to the gate. And there's a little terminal for these pods that come by every 18 seconds, I think. And the disembodied voice says, do you want to go to Terminal 5? And you push the button that says yes, and the doors open, and there is your pod, which is an all-electric vehicle. It's probably about, 6 feet long and 4 feet wide. Maybe it's big enough for 6 people, although I saw lots of individuals getting in, couples getting in with luggage. And so I got in, and the door told voice told me to push the button to close the door. I closed the door, and a little voice said, we will be traveling to Terminal 5. It will take us approximately 5 minutes. If there is traffic, it might take a slight bit longer. And it smoothly and quietly in the dark took me to Terminal 5, opened the doors and walked out. And there I am in the parking garage on the level just one floor above the departure gate at British Airways. It was absolutely delightful and easy and much better than trying to find either a cab or a bus to get to Terminal 5 at 5:30 in the morning when I had to be there.
See, that's excellent. That is inside a baseball right there. It sounds like the Brits are doing a pretty decent job at the mass transit.
Well, I think the Brits did a good job. We were on buses a lot in Oxford to get into downtown, and they're smooth and frequent and go all over. And then the rail service, of course, was delightful. We'd have to download a barcode on the days that we wanted to use a pass, and it would appear on our phone most of the time. Some of the times I had to go back to the system and find the file, because it would say file is corrupted and the barcode wasn't working, but I could do that. And you just use your phone and get into the place to grab the train. And the trains are lovely. They're comfortable. We had first class passes, which meant we got meals sometimes, even with wine. And it was delightful.
We're talking with Susan Elizabeth Reese Painter, a traveler and an attorney in beautiful Newport, Oregon, here on Beyond the Headlines. I'm your host, Brett Recamp. Did you get a chance on your trip to England to act like a tourist and really take in some of the dramatic scenery or some of the architecture that perhaps you wanted to see?
Oh, yes. Yes. We both in Oxford and in Cambridge, we took what they call the on-off buses. And so for something like £25, which was probably about $30 per person, you get onto these wonderful buses and they give you little earphones so you don't have to hear somebody telling stories, and you can either mute them or make them louder. You can change languages in what you hear. And it's a running narrative about the things that you're seeing. So it was really useful. Even though I'd been to Oxford 50 years ago, lots of things had changed and lots of things I didn't know. So there were stories about when Churchill did certain things and different famous people who were part of different colleges and some of the architectural interesting points and the American Cemetery, which I believe was outside of Cambridge, but I don't remember that exactly. Anyway, each of those buses was very, very helpful, very interesting. And you can stop at different points, get off, and then get back on. The passes are good for 24 hours. So we could have theoretically gone on for a few more hours the next morning if we'd wanted to. We got into a cab on the way to the river in London and told the cab driver we wanted to get to the river, but meanwhile, we'd like to have lunch at the best British pub in London. So he took us to an old pub called the Lion something. And it was right next to Parliament. And we had an absolutely wonderful meal. They had a variety of English pies and good beer, good wine, good service, friendly, delightful, and a big sign that told us that all of the prime ministers in ancient memory and recent memory had been there to tip a glass at some point. And then we went down to the river, walked down to the river from there, and got into a long boat, took a cruise along the Thames, which also had some really interesting sights and discussions by a fellow who was a live person doing the commentary, going up to as far as Greenwich. And then it turned around and came back, and it was quiet going back. So it was really lovely and very informative.
Susan just got back from England. We're talking about your trip there. What'd you think of the food? You did mention just a little fish and chips, if you will, some pub food, delicious ales, whatever. Did you eat your way through any of these portions of England, and what'd you think of the fare?
I thought it was good. We actually had a couple of meals at what I understand is kind of a chain called Cote, C-O-T-E, Brasserie, which is a French-themed series of restaurants. And they were quite good, but we had fish and chips at the place, the Lamb, that we stayed in Ely. As I said, we had good meals on the train. We had the wonderful pub meal. We had some good home cooking with my friends, family and friends in Doncaster. So, yeah, the British cooking is different. They always make coffee with skim milk, not cream. Ask for cream and no chance. But they have a lot of little coffee shops. And so you can get lattes and fancy coffee similar to our Starbucks. And I think there's Starbucks too, but not as many.
How about the speed of the population as you move around to these different cities and then the people themselves? Did you feel anything different as far as how you were treated and how people interact with one another?
I was treated very well. Everyone was courteous, thoughtful, interesting. They were, of course, in the middle of having Liz Truss and getting rid of Liz Truss. So they were far more interested in talking about British politics than American politics, which was interesting. We watched some of the parliamentary debates, and I was impressed at the way the elegance of the conversations and the way that the British politicians could criticize each other with courtesy and friendliness. And they would call each other names that were not profane and not bullying. And sometimes they'd even apologize for things that might have sounded a little off color.
It's almost funny to hear you say that.
The tone of voice and the inflection sometimes was a little much, but the language was delightful, and the way they use the language is quite interesting. And once my ear got accustomed to it, I could pick up some of the things that might not be quite readily understood by Americans who haven't had some experience there. But yeah, I thought it was great. One of the things that was quite interesting to me is the prevalence of cameras on light poles and utility poles throughout, everywhere, with no particular notification that you're being recorded and you're being observed. And my friend said, yeah, they started that in the 80s, that there's a lot of video surveillance and they don't feel it's necessary to tell everyone. Everyone knows about it. But you look up walking through the streets of Doncaster, this tiny, well, it's not all that tiny, but it's a kind of out of the way town in Yorkshire, and realize you're being videotaped.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if that's your field of law or anything, but I do.
I filed motions to suppress based on videotapes.
Okay, so you noticed that for sure.
I did.
That's something that you might want to think about, I suppose, because somewhere there's a database, whether it's Scotland Yard or, you know, nationwide there in the UK.
There is.
Okay. Any advice for someone who might not have been even to Europe or across the pond or the UK or England itself? Would you recommend just going straight to London or focusing on the northern portion, anywhere in particular, or a time frame suggestion, anything like that?
Well, London is the easiest in the hub, and it's real simple to go from the train station virtually any place that's a major city in England, and even, you know, taking the Channel across to France from there, going to Ireland. So I think going to London and plotting a route after that would probably be the easiest for most people. Credit cards are used really all over the place. In fact, some places say we don't even accept cash, although cab drivers would have a sign that say, we'll accept credit cards, but we like cash some of the times. But the little icons that say swipe the cards that only a few of our credit cards have are very common there. And so you use your credit card to go through the train turnstile or something they call the Oyster card in London, but I found just using my credit card was fine. And as I said, cash is uncommon. Cell phones work. Everyone uses them all the time. The GPSs work. Be prepared that the coffee's different if you get it in a restaurant, but it's a wonderful opportunity, a great experience. I was delighted to go back again and see some of the things I'd seen before and a lot of things I hadn't seen and see what had changed.
Good for you. And you went through Willamette International Travel.
I did.
Are you happy?
I've used them for years and years. All my friends use Willamette. We've known Christina, who started the company, for a long time, and it's the travel agency. In fact, I swear by their 24-hour real person answering service, which I needed to use trying to get my seat assignment on the way back. It was 2 a.m. here, and I had to call them and get some help getting my seat assignment because the British Air's computers weren't working, and they told me I needed some COVID information, which I couldn't download. And fortunately, Nancy picked up the phone, took care of it for me, and I was on the plane the next day, and everything was fine. So, yeah, I love Willamette.
Wouldn't
travel without them.
That makes sense. Yeah, probably worth it. You don't know you need them until you need them.
Absolutely.
And then everything's taken care of. That's awesome. Congrats on. Sometimes you just got to get away, and you do it. And you have to put it on your calendar. You have to budget for it, and then you just have to execute it. Right? Are you glad you went there?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'd do it again. In fact, my friend is talking about going back in the spring, and I said maybe I'll come.
There is Newport, Oregon-based attorney Susan Elizabeth Reese Painter talking about her trip across the pond to England. She did it with the help of our friends at Willamette International Travel. For more, you can go to wittravel.com. That's WIT travel.com.
You have been listening to Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of this week's stories. You can follow me on Twitter at Brett Recamp. If you missed anything, the podcast is up at KXL.com, and you can download the show on iTunes or Google Play. Just look for Beyond the Headlines KXL. We now have 445 shows to choose from. For Alpha Media USA in downtown Portland, I'm Brett Recamp on FM News 101.
This has been Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. This has been a special presentation of Alpha Media.